to Deranged Pictures officially podcast 3, isn't it, Ben?
Podcast 3, yeah. It's been a long time coming, but we're here, back again.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're getting better each time.
Hopefully so. All right, Wicked. We've got loads to talk about this time. So let's kick off. Should we start with some news?
Yeah, some news, yeah. So you want to tell us what's been going on in the world?
Okay, well, I think I mentioned this before, but we're a lot closer to it now. Obviously, in terms of zombies, I'm a bit zombied out. But I'm equally really excited about The Walking Dead screening in the States on the Halloween evening. So obviously it won't be too long before we'll get the chance to see the first sort of episode of The Walking Dead TV show. I think it's like a special, so it's like an hour and a half or whatever. For those of you who don't know, I'm sure most of you do, Walking Dead is basically, it's a new TV show and it's produced by Gaylan Hurd, isn't
it? Gaylan Hurd, yeah.
It's been directed by Frank Darabont, and it's basically a television interpretation of the Walking Dead graphic novel, which I've been reading for a few years. I think you have, haven't you, Ben?
Yeah, I've got them all, yeah.
So that airs on one of the American TV channels on Halloween evening, so I'm really looking forward to that. So that's some interesting news coming up.
Suspect has two male Caucasians. Be advised, a half fired from police officers. One Linden County officer is wounded.
We are 1097 in code 100, Highway 18, EP of Interstate, please advise.
Sounds like they chasing those idiots up and down every back road we got.
Maybe we'll get on one of them video shows, you know, like World's Craziest Police Chases. What do you think?
What I think, Leon, is you need to stay focused. And make sure you got a round in the chamber and your safety off.
Would be kind of cool to get on one of them shows.
But more importantly, on home turf, what we're getting quite excited about is Rob Levitt's Celluloid Screams Film Festival, which is 3 days of wall-to-wall horror movies.
Yeah, and that's on what weekend is it? 22nd of October?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, the showroom in Sheffield. And I thought what we'd do is release the official lineup now, so we'll perhaps go through the films that we've got out there and see what our thoughts are on there. I mean, I must admit there's quite a few on there that I really heard of or know much about, but no, I like it.
And I think that happened last year, didn't it, with Coffin Rock, and you really liked that film, didn't you?
No, I didn't see that.
Which one did you see that you liked?
House of the Devil.
Yeah, but there was a documentary kind of stuff.
Oh, Mungo Lake,
yeah. I remember you were talking about that was from last year. But yeah, this year we've got We Are What We Are, which is a cannibal flick. Not in a jungle, a la, you know, Holocaust and Ferox, but I think it's more contemporary, kind of urban-based cannibal movie.
Is it another fake documentary one?
I don't think that is, no.
Good.
Okay, then you've got Subconscious, which is a found footage kind of film.
Yeah,
but apparently this one's quite good from what I've been reading about it. I think it's the premiere of it, so whoever put the review online, they must have seen a screener or something.
Yeah.
Because this is the world premiere of Subconscious. But yeah, again, it's a found footage sort of movie.
Which, I'm getting a bit sick of found footage. Well, I don't even like them in the first place.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and, you know, we'll hold our breath till you see it, but apparently this one's supposed to be quite scary and kind of go harks back, so it'll be interesting to see what Rob says. On talking about Celluloid Screams, I've just spoken to Rob earlier on tonight, and he's agreed to speak to us next week. So before the festival, we should have another podcast going up, which will be dedicated to Rob talking about the festival and what he's excited about and what he's seen and we haven't.
Yeah, so if I get my arse in gear and get them all online in that time.
It's down arse on Ben's head. All right, so check out that. That'll hopefully be up maybe the weekend before the festival, so you're looking at maybe about the 18th or something like that of October.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the Friday night. On the Saturday, we've got Bird with a Crystal Plumage on the big screen, which, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'll probably watch this film once a week or something.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it loads of times, but it's
we've seen it on the big screen already.
We have indeed. Well. Yeah, I don't know whether this will be a new digital version. I know they're hyping up it's the 40th anniversary edition, so it could look lovely. We don't know about that, but if you haven't seen it, it's a giallo from it's Argento's first giallo movie. It's a cracker, and if you haven't seen it, you really need to go see that film. It's followed up by another film called Vampires. Which I don't really know anything about. I think that is a pseudo-documentary type thing.
Right, okay.
Somebody going in and talking to vampires, and apparently they're just like you and me. That's kind of the angle on that film.
Oh, right, okay.
Then we've got the surprise film, which we do know. We're privy to that information. We're not going to tell you.
No.
But I'm really excited about this, and this is the film that I most want to see at the festival, so I'm looking forward to that. Then in the afternoon, there's a screening of City of the Living Dead, with the kind of guest of honour I get with Catriona McCall.
The city of the dead. The living dead. A cursed city. Where the gates of hell have been opened.
You've got to. You must reclose those gates.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast, during which police authorities have declared a state of emergency, effective immediately, within Dunwich County. All citizens are requested to return to their homes as quickly as possible. In case of necessity, contact this station, Radio WDWC. The telephone number is 8259881. All citizens are urged to remain calm.
So, fingers crossed, that should be a good event. Then the second surprise film, which I think we can tell you...
It's been released.
What's that then, Ben?
It's the remake of I Spit on Your Grave.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, which I know recently showed at Frightfest with a small degree of cuts, okay. I believe. And I think it's the same version as far as I understand, matter of seconds.
But, you know, to be honest with you, the days we live in now, back in the day when Ben and I collected movies years ago, you know, a cut was quite a big thing, you know, it kind of meant that you were missing quite a lot from the film, whereas I imagine they're only really going to cut some sort of sexualized violence rather than, like, any other type of violence.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm not kind of pandering to see extra sexualized violence, so, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that film. And then finally, The Pack, which I don't really know much about. I think it's a French vampire movie.
Right, okay.
So that's the Saturday.
I get really sick of vampire films as well.
Yeah, it's vampires and zombies, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just that they don't do a fucking vampire found footage film, then I'll really be pissed off.
And then on the Sunday, where it starts off with The Omen on the big screen, which is a classic. Then it's the Rob Morgan shorts, which is three of his shorts that I think maybe Rob never screened at the festival before. But Rob Morgan is on hand to show his new film as well, and I think he's doing a Q&A. Then there's Critters, and then there's Dream House, which I really want to see this film as well. So there's two definite films in there that I'm eager to see. This basically is like a social kind of movie, you know, a kind of social comment movie mixed with kind of a splatter movie. So, you know, it should be quite interesting to see how they pull that off. And then finally, The Revenant, which
I'm not too sure about. Another vampire one or something?
I think, French, maybe. Yeah, obviously with a title like that. So, yeah, there's a few in there that we know about, a few that we don't. So it'll be really interesting to talk to Rob next week about that. So, keep your ears pricked for that.
Yeah.
All right, let's roll on then. Oh, one more bit of news, just because I'm excited about it, and then I'll shut up and let you talk.
Yeah, go for it.
Del Toro's new movie that he's producing is coming out next year. It's called Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. I've always keep banging on about this, whether on vlogs or podcasts or God knows what, but it's a particular favourite of mine. It's a TV movie from back in 1973 or 74 or something like that. And basically it's about this couple are moving to the house, and down in the basement something lurks. There's a little door, and at night this door opens and little creatures come out and create havoc in the house. It's a real cult classic. I love this film, and it'd be really cool to have him as a producer of this, you know, this big screen remake of it. So, again, quite looking forward to that. That was just a little bit of interesting news. All right, let's move on to some movies.
Yeah, okay. Well, should we run through some recent Blu-ray releases and
talk about what we think
of them? Okay. So, I mean...
What should we start off with?
Well, the big one, I think...
That we were looking forward to was City, wasn't it?
Yeah, City of the Living Dead, which was long overdue a good print release.
It was.
And it seems to come out of thin air a bit, really, doesn't it? Well,
it's weird. It's like waiting for a bus, isn't it? Like wait for years, and then all of a sudden, two Blu-rays come out within a month of each other.
Yeah.
You had the US release, the Blue Underground release of City Living Dead, which by all accounts was like, you know, looked really great and had quite a few extras on it, but got eclipsed by Arrow, the UK Cult Labs label. With their version, which it's the one I actually went for in the end, and it has like, you know, loads and loads of extras on it. It's a really, really good disc, and the film looks absolutely beautiful. The end sequence of that film I've never fully appreciated until seeing it on Blu-ray. Just how good that sort of cavern scene is, with all those corpses rising and the cobwebs, and it just looks absolutely beautiful. So for all of you, definitely The Beyond on Blu-ray from Arrow, it gets a thumbs up from me.
The Beyond,
City of the Living Dead. Yeah. Jesus, just one swig of beer and... But talking of The Beyond, that is coming though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know Flesh Eaters is coming, Flesh Eaters later in the year. I think last year Celluloid Screams or Dead by Dawn, one or the other, Ian McCulloch was talking about them putting together Flesh Eaters Blu-ray. Right.
Okay, so that's about time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So hopefully we'll get some of that later in the year.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll have the commentary from Jay Slater on from the original
release
back in the day. Yeah, definitely. On Blu-ray again from Arrow, they put up that they're releasing Phenomena in January, Cat and Nine Tails, both from obviously Dario Argento, and then they've got there's rumblings of Bay of Blood, the first sort of Barva Blu-ray, which I think we'll all be looking forward to.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the reasons why I've kind of gone into Blu-rays, to hope that the Barva films will eventually come out in that format, because you know they are going to look stunning.
But that's a beautiful thing about Blu-rays, isn't it? If it extenuates all these different colours and beautiful vivid colours, then...
It is. It's the format to see these old-school classics, and far more than maybe the latest release. They look fantastic, obviously, you know, your releases and stuff, but really, if you're a film fan, the format is fantastic for the old-school sort of classics.
Because what are you going to think, back in the day, they did so much more manipulation of lighting, didn't they? And there was a lot more emphasis on the use of colours, especially Barber.
Exactly.
So this is it, and it's like you're saying, if you compare it to today's films, where you're either getting perhaps more CGI and a lot more manufactured lighting. How Barber, what did he say, used to spend 30 minutes at most lighting a scene, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
So...
Well, even when he was doing black and white films, apparently he used to like them like they were colour movies.
Yeah,
and I think that's what makes his black and white stuff stand out.
Yeah, a lot more organic. That was what I was looking for,
So, no, that is really exciting. So, again, Arrow really are the company to keep an eye on. Although, if we're being really honest, it's our chance to be really honest with people. As I was talking to you last time I saw you, Ben, I was checking out my DVD releases of the Blue Underground.
Yeah.
Releases of Bird with a Crystal Plumage and the Stendhal Syndrome from Dario Argento, and I have to say, on a big screen and you know upscale, the actual DVDs in my mind look better than the Blu-ray release.
Yeah, it's interesting that.
Yeah, so I think if you are, you know, you're thinking about getting those Blue Underground discs. No disrespect to Blue Underground, though, if they were a fantastic company releasing some corking sort of titles back in the last few years.
Yeah,
but I think maybe the first sort of initial run of Blu-rays that they did, you know, aren't that great. There's actually a lot of digital noise and stuff like that I personally found on those upgrades. So it was a question of just keep the DVDs and flog those Blu-rays that I purchased.
Really. Yeah.
And on the same ground, Arrow can't be taken out of the equation either. Their DVD of Dawn of the Dead, if you'd already got the Ultimate DVD edition with all those fantastic discs and commentary and stuff, there is no reason to get the Arrow Dawn of the Dead. It's the same sort of structure, isn't it? In fact, I think you're getting a lot less of the extras.
Yeah.
And it's a step up, a tiny step up on Blu-ray. I don't think it warrants buying that disc.
And there's only one of the versions. It's actually Blu-ray as
well,
that's
right.
It?
The others are two DVDs. So yeah, it's a question of the whole Blu-ray thing is, you know, you try before you buy.
Yeah.
You know, some look cracking, some don't. And also recently, Inferno. Just checked out the Inferno release from Arrow, and it looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, I went back to my DVD to see if there was any difference, and there was a considerable, noticeable difference on there. So that really is definitely worth checking out that disc as well. So any other Blu-rays that you've got, Ben?
Not recently. I've got a few on my shopping list, though. So
what are you getting excited about?
Certainly Exorcist is one to look forward to.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that comes out on the, I think it's the 8th of October, so or 11th. So it's next week sometime. So.
And do you know which version we're going to
get? I think you're getting both versions.
That's the good version
you've never seen, which I've never seen, with the Spiderwalk sequence. Yeah. And then obviously the original theatrical version as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. A couple of other things I'm looking forward to over the next sort of Halloween release. Blu-ray, what else have we got here? We've got Deep Red coming out on Blu-ray in about a week's time. So, again, from Arrow, I think. So, looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not on Blu-ray, but coming out is the Psycho Legacy documentary, which is all about the Psycho franchise and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I know we babbled about that on one of our video logs, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. Madman, which is a great slasher from the 80s.
Special
edition release, which... basically, it's got the same commentary on as before, but they've got like a retrospective documentary talking about cast and crew, so it might be worth picking up for
that. So, the one with that, it's got that big fucker on the cover with a
Badman Mars with an axe.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's a really cool film. I quite like it. It's an underrated slasher, so that's worth it. Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, again, a personal TV favourite of mine from sort of the early 80s, is getting a DVD release as well.
Yeah.
That's got
guy from L.I. Lauren.
Dr. Giggles, Larry Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's also in Sam Raimi's, what was it called?
Drag Me to Hell?
No, yeah. the one with the guy who makes his own face.
Oh, Dartman.
Dartman, yeah, good old Larry Drake. So there you go, so there's a lot. I mean, this time of year is always really good for releases for sort of genre fans. To be fair, previous years have been much better. But I think there's some stuff to get excited about.
Yeah, it's picking up so far, isn't it? It's getting better and better.
We should crack straight into movies then.
Yeah, so we'll talk about a few of the things that we've seen.
All right, okay.
Over the past couple of months.
What are we going to kick off with then, man?
Now, what do you fancy? Piranha 3D?
Yeah, I like Piranha 3D.
Yeah.
See that gap right there?
Yeah.
Quake opened that up. Now it's a connecting passage.
Descending fissure.
Oh, my God. It's at least 200 feet, Novak. Sam?
Something bit me!
Sam, what are you seeing down there?
Oh my God.
Sam!
Yeah.
It's a real blast, man. It was a lot of fun. Tell you, it didn't need to be in 3D, though.
No.
I noticed it being in 3D.
I thought it was kind of nice, I guess, if you're looking at it as a third Piranha film, then it kind of fits well like that. But, you know, how many fucking people know that there's two other Piranha films out there who are going to see this film?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, but, you know, it was really good fun. Although there's a lot of talking there. Apparently one of the characters, just forget about him. The cameraman on the boat, for some reason, you never see what happens to him. I can't remember.
Oh, really? I can't remember that.
But apparently, yeah, he's just sort of dismissed. So, yeah, maybe he pops up in the sequel.
Right, okay.
But yeah, it's a character that they forgot. But, yeah, Piranha 3D is exactly what it is, what it was it's supposed to be. You know, I know a lot of people have seen this movie. I know it didn't do very well box office, did it?
Did it not?
So I think the people that have seen it have enjoyed it, but...
Was it an 18 over here?
I think it was an 18 here.
Yeah, so I think that's part of the problem, because if you get 15, 16-year-olds going to see that, they'll lap that up, but I think...
Yeah, but that's what's good about it. The fact is, an 18, so you do get the carnage, and there's certainly a lot of TNA in this movie.
Yeah.
If you're Kelly Brook fans, then, you know, it's worth the price of the ticket alone for that, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, a lot of gore, and it was good to see Eli Roth get chomped up by some piranhas. It was pretty good fun.
Yeah.
So, what
do you think about Alexander Arger's sort of his career? Because
it's a difficult one, isn't it?
I can't wear the guy out, to be honest.
Well, I don't know. It's a weird one. I know this film was shot a while back, and they held it back for a long time so they could have a summer release.
Yeah.
And did the retro sort of fitting 3D. It wasn't shot in 3D, obviously. It was kind of stuck on after. And obviously, that's, again, why you don't really see it as a 3D movie, do you know what I mean? Because it wasn't made that way. And now Wes Craven's got a film coming out next month, which, again, has had a sort of retro-fitted 3D to it. So, you know, it's clearly the way that the studios are going. We've got 3D TVs coming out, and, you know...
It's a new thing. It's Star new Wars 3D. Titanic 3D.
Yeah, all your classics are going to come out in the 3D format, basically. You know, which I've got no problem with. It does make you kind of wonder whether to keep your money in your wallet for the next sort of few years.
Yeah.
And not buy your sort of standard Blu-ray.
Well, this is it, because it moves so quick.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see them doing a 3D version of, you know, City Living Dead or Deep Red. So you're all right, I think, with the old Arrow titles and the sort of like the cult classic stuff. But any of your mainstream movies, I don't really see there's much point going out and buying a Blu-ray of them, because give it 2 or 3 years, you're going to end up seeing Scarface in 3D.
Yeah. You know, that could be it, yeah. Battleship Potemkin 3D.
Citizen Kane 3D.
3D, yeah.
So, you know, this is the thing. So, essentially, keep your money in your pocket, buy your low-grade exploitation films for the time being, and then in sort of your mainstream fare, you know, 2013, it's all in 3D.
But then, do you think that's a good thing, though? I'm firmly rooted in the idea that it's... 2D film is 2D, and that's where it should be.
But, you know, it's a debate in itself, isn't it? And they don't want to get all that Mark Kermode and start, like, you know, bashing 3D. Because I do think it's here to stay. I do think it's that leap now between, you know, colour film and, you know, when we first had, like, you know, sound on movies, it was a massive step. And then again, colour film was a massive step. And I see 3D as that massive step. I think, you know, everyone now these days, just been talking about before, getting bigger tellies in the front room, you know, 42, 50-inch screens that you can sit around and watch your 3D movies in, and I think that's the next stage of revolution.
Yeah.
And I think you can fight it, but, you know, money talks, as they say, and...
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But then the significant disadvantages to 3D that you never found with colour or sound, and that's perhaps the trick. Colour and sound is a natural progression.
But don't forget, you know, no one's going to ban you or stop you watching those original 2D versions. You know, it's a bit like VHS and DVD, you know, when you had all your purists saying, oh, DVD, you know what I mean, when it first came out, and now they've all succumbed.
Yeah.
And most of the people that I know used to collect old, obscure VHSs have all moved on to the DVD and flogging them off on eBay and stuff, so it's just the next progression, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 3D's here to stay, so just don't go and buy a telly just yet, wait till they get a bit cheaper.
Yeah, that's
it. But anyway, we spiraled from Piranha 3D.
Yeah, we did. Let's bring it back to Piranha 3D.
It's worth going and watching, isn't it?
It is. It's very enjoyable.
Although you probably missed it. It's done now.
Yeah.
We're a bit behind on that. Something else that came and went, which I did manage to see, although I wish I hadn't, was Elm Street, the new Elm Street movie. I mean, Jesus Christ. Absolutely pointless exercise. And I think it's been a backfire for Platinum Dunes, this film, hasn't it? Because... I don't think it particularly made loads of money, and I think everyone really fucking hates it.
Yeah, so, well, I hope it did lose them shitloads of money just to teach them fucking right for doing something like that.
Yeah. I mean, though, you know, they did all right with Texas Chainsaw, so it's not saying that these films can't be, like, modernised or anything, but it's like you really have to do a good job of it if you're going to do it, and I think they dropped the ball on this one.
Of course. I think Elm Street's one of those films that if you look at it, it doesn't massively date. Yes, the clothing... dates, yes, some of the hairstyles.
The concept totally doesn't.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. This is it.
And I think for all the good things about the original were completely missed in the remake.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, Robert Englund pretty much brought 50% of that movie with him when he was signed on and became Freddy Krueger. And I think, you know, obviously people bang on about, oh, how can you get someone else to do the role of somebody who had done it before? But in that case, I really truly believe you can't make an Elm Street movie without Robert Englund.
He is
Freddy Krueger, there's no doubt about that, despite how good they think this new guy from The Watchmen is.
Yeah, which, you know, he was good in Watchmen, but now he's shit in this.
He was.
Had a weird voice.
The hell about Nancy? Sorry, I can't remember the actress's name, but obviously I remember the original Nancy, who was, like, you know, a real gutsy female lead who pretty much revolutionised the sort of female role within genre movies back in the 80s. She kind of stood out alone compared to a lot of the kind of cliche characters and stuff, and was a really strong female role model. And obviously in the remake, the character of Nancy is just rubbishly portrayed by the actress. You know,
I think that there were so many problems with that film. One bit that always really did my head in was the bit where they showed the flashback of when Freddy Krueger was first turned on by the parents, and it all stemmed from this rumour about him being a paedophile and all of this, and it made out as though, while he was this janitor or whatever the fuck he were at this school, he's quite a good guy, and he looked after all the kids and all of this, and then it showed you all the parents coming and getting him. And at a point, I was like, man, like, you know, this is really harsh. Like, yeah. I think it's really, I can understand why Freddy wants to fuck all these kids up, you know.
And then
right at the end, you go, oh no, actually, he really was a paedophile.
Mm.
But by that time, half an hour has passed in the film, and I've bought into the fact that this guy was actually persecuted by his parents for what they thought was a problem.
Yeah.
So they completely screwed up the narrative of the film, so much so that I'm buying into a character that really I shouldn't have been buying into.
Yeah.
And when you get that, and you're like, ah, oh, fuck, you know, so it came out just feeling...
And I think the basic thing that they missed as well was the macabre sense of fun.
Yeah, exactly,
which
is
what happens in the original movie, which totally is devoid in this remake. So yeah, I don't see people talking about this film in a couple of years' time. It's gonna certainly go under the radar. It's a big no on the Elm Street. I don't think anybody out there in genre land is going to be excited about that film anyway. I don't think anyone's making a beeline to go and see it. But if you're curious and it hits you on the DVD shelves in the next couple of weeks, just leave it alone.
Yeah,
it's not worth your £3.75.
Yeah, that's it. Rental. Teach Platinum Dunes a lesson. Don't fucking rent
Absolutely. All right, moving on. I know you've not seen this one, so I'll keep it brief, but me and Matt went to see it this week. Resident Evil 4 3D.
This was the start of an apocalypse that would sweep the entire world. That was 5 years ago. My name is Alice. The last survivors followed a radio signal to Alaska.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on emergency frequency. We offer safety and security, food and shelter.
But I could find only one.
You know, 3D stepped up slightly better. Obviously, it was more noticeable. Shot on the same camera as Avatar, so obviously it's been shot 3D rather than just sort of retrofitted.
Yeah.
I really, you know, it's a Resident Evil movie. You know, it's just moving the franchise along. It's a little bit like a Saw movie in terms of, you know, I mean, okay, Saw movies is different. It's a bad example because they're kind of complete in their own right. Whereas Resident Evil movies really are just moving the plot forward along.
Yeah.
And I think probably for a beginning, a middle, and an end, this one probably is the weakest in that respect.
Yeah.
It's basically for the fans, and it's a nod to the game, a little bit of the game here, a little bit of the movie here, and, you know, it's a continuation. So, yeah, you know, not mega brilliant. I know it's done really good box office, so obviously Res 5's already greenlit and is going on board. But, yeah, it's a good lot of fun, and if you like those films and you follow it, I'm a big Resident Evil fan anyway, so there's no way I'm not going to see it.
But the problem is, I always see that the films are becoming less and less like the games. So.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, they're bringing in characters from the games, and they're expanding on that. When I watch this, you know, obviously there's a few bits and pieces in Res 4 that nod to the Res 4 game and the Res 5 game.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a continuity there, which I kind of appreciated. Especially even some of the shots with Wesker and his sunglasses and stuff is all replicated from the game.
Right, okay.
So in a way, what Anderson's doing is he's appeasing the fans a little bit more. I think when the first film came out, everyone was like, what the hell? Why isn't it in the mansion? Why isn't it like this? And he was like, well, I'm trying to make a different film here.
Yeah, of course.
And I think he's trying to make a different film now, but at the same time doing nods to the game. In this film as well, there's a couple of bits where, you know, Mila's character... is taking stuff out of a bag, and some of the stuff is some gold coins, and the guy said, what's that? And she goes, oh, it's just a hobby, and it's the money that she gets in the game.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So he's tying the two together kind of neatly. So.
Yeah, of course.
And obviously you get the inclusion of the sort of Mangina character, I believe it's called, the big guy with the axe from the game comes into the film, and he's a heavy presence, and it's nice to see him in sort of screen incarnation, really.
Cool.
So yeah, I enjoyed Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it out. Which is your favourite Resident Evil film, do you
think? It's difficult. They kind of all bleed into. To, you know what I mean? I wasn't a big fan of the first one. I've got to be honest. But the second one I enjoyed.
Yeah,
I
really liked the second one. Yeah.
And then the third one came along and I really liked the third one.
Yeah, I thought the third one was a bit weak.
Yeah, a lot of people do, but I'm a big Russell McCulloch fan. Yeah. I know he shoots stuff in the desert all the time.
Yeah.
I like that kind of grade that they gave the film and everything. I see some zombie birds and some stuff in there. And I think out of the film so far, it's got the best looking zombies in it, part three.
Yeah.
They really do look a bit like the zombies that we've been shown from the Walking Dead TV show.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
You know, people are taking the time to really, really do some good makeup work there. So yeah, all in all, you know, Resident Evil 4, go see it if you're a fan of the franchise. We're going to move on and talk about a film that everyone on the underground has been talking about recently. It's divided people considerably, hasn't it, Ben?
Yep, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Which one are we talking about here first? Just start out before.
Yeah, we're talking about a Serbian film.
Oh, a Serbian film.
Pažljivo. Sprema se nešto veliko.
Ti si porno glumac koji želi da zna o čemu se radi u filmu.
Where do we start with this film?
Well, let's talk a bit about the history. That's probably the easiest way to start about it. And I think it first got a showing at a...
Festival, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's done its rounds on quite a few festival circuits. You know, as we know, it's a Serbian film from the title. And I think it first major release, I guess, that I heard of was in Austin, Texas.
Drafthouse, is it?
Drafthouse,
that's right, that's right. I think that was the official premiere of this movie.
I think it was shown in over 2 days as well, so they showed it a Saturday night and they showed it like a Sunday
night. That's right, they did, and apparently the audience was like speechless when they left. There was no one talking.
Yeah.
So it shows the impact. It becomes very, very personal, this film, I think. But yeah, it did. It went on to do. I think it's done a couple more festivals within the last month of October that we're in now. Obviously, back in at the end of August, there was Fright Fest in London, and notoriously, the film apparently the local council asked for the film to be certified, in which case, and apparently, rather than certifying the 35mm theatrical version, all they had to submit was a DVD version.
Yep.
And apparently, there's some sort of wranglings between a DVD certificate and a theatrical certificate.
Yeah.
I think basically what it is, you know, in the theatre they can guarantee that the kids aren't going to see this film.
Yeah.
Whereas on a DVD or Blu-ray, there's no guarantee. So I think they take it a little bit more seriously when they're certifying home viewing. So it's had a basically at Fright Fest, they submitted this version and they said, yeah, you can screen it, but it's going to have 4 minutes of cuts.
Yep. And it amounted to something like 49 cuts in total.
Yeah. And when you see the film, you know exactly where those cuts are.
Exactly.
You feel like a censor when you're watching it, just going, okay, that won't get through, that won't get through.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting. And then it brings us on to, again, celluloid screens, talk about it being the mystery film there or not. I'm not going to say whether it is. I'm not going to say whether it isn't. But yeah, there's been some talk about that being, is it that film? But yeah, it's everyone's talking about this film on the underground if they know horror movies and stuff like that.
So then, Matt, as we've talked quite a bit about it, and people who may not have heard about it, should we tell them what the film's about?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful how we do this on a podcast. I think other people have been quite delicate about how they talk about it. Because of the subject matter, you know, it's quite sensitive, and because this is our third or fourth podcast, we don't want to be yanked off and not be allowed to do anymore. So we have to be quite careful. But I guess we could run through the plot.
Quite quickly. Yeah.
A guy who used to work in the porn industry is basically he's not doing it anymore. He did it back in the day, and he's approached by an old sort of colleague of his that he used to work with. And she says, you know, oh, there's this guy I know, and he wants to make artistic pornography. And, you know, he's offering lots and lots of money if you get involved, and he really wants you specifically because, you know, you're really good at your job. Now, I guess, you know, being really good at your job, you need to read into that what he's good at.
Yeah.
And we can't really divulge too much more, but, you know, if you're good at your job in a porno film, then you know what you're good at. So, yeah, do you want to carry on from
yeah, that? Absolutely. So, this gentleman, his character's called Milos, and in there, his family is struggling financially, and although he's retired from the industry, he sees this as one last opportunity to cut himself free from the industry and also set him and his family up for life. He's got a wife and a young kid. And so he reluctantly, I guess, agrees to star in this film. The film then starts very much, I guess, gonzo filmmaking sort of style, where they come in and, well, they basically pick him up in a car, and he has no idea what is going to be filmed.
Oh, I see. Sorry, mate. You mean gonzo in terms of you know, the type of film they're making rather than the film we're watching.
Oh, not like Gonzo.
I must say at this state, or, you know, right at the beginning, technically it's a beautiful film.
It is
for a first time kind of production from the team of the writers and the directors and editors and, you know, cinematographers and everything. It's a very, very good looking film, and technically, you know, everyone needs a pat on the back for that, because they shot on Red, and, you know it's a nice HD camera and everything, but they really kind of brought the best out of it and gave it a very, very artistic film.
It looks fantastic.
And they had no money as well, apparently, which you wouldn't believe, because, you know, it's really, really well thought out and looks great.
Well constructed.
So, on with the plot then.
And so he begins basically doing a set of scenes with various situations where he's put in and told to perform, and obviously the scenes kind of get more and more vile and disgusting, if you like.
Yeah, they do, and it, you know, it escalates. It's a film of escalation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're watching it and you think, oh God, you know, can this film get any worse? And then, yeah, it does. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It's a very difficult film to talk about. We don't want to give anything away either, you know. It's one of them films where, you know, you sometimes think, oh, I wish, you know, I hadn't known much about it before I'd seen it, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think you need to know what you're going into with this film. You know, we're going to talk about a few other films in this sort of slot here as well that kind of tie into this sort of exploitation sort of thing. But I don't actually think a Serbian film is an exploitation film.
No.
To me, an exploitation film is a film that exploits the audience. You know, not the people in the film that are doing these things.
Of course.
It's the audience that are getting exploited. And I think, with to some extent, the audience for a Serbian film isn't getting exploited, because they're given exactly what they think they're going to get and more.
Yeah.
It's contentious cinema. It's the highest, isn't it? Really?
It is, absolutely.
I mean, we banged on about Martyrs, didn't we, earlier on in the year? And, you know, Martyrs look like a picnic.
It fucking does. It absolutely does. It's one. Yes, I seriously do think you should know about it before you watch it. You should prepare yourself before you watch it.
It's an interesting one as well, because, as I said, I spoke to Rob Nevitt. You know, I was obviously kind of programming his Celluloid Screams Festival at the moment, and again, there was talk whether it will be, whether it won't be the sort of surprise film. From my point of view, I actually don't think it should be a surprise film. I think if you'd gone there to see a load of horror films and you don't know anything about this film, you just think, oh, it's another one in the programme, and you sat there and you experience it, you know, I think there's a certain responsibility to be had when you screen this film.
Yeah.
You know, and then what, to watch Critters afterwards?
Yeah, I know, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how that would work. So, you know, I think it's a film that you track down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite interesting. Basically, what else can we say, really, without giving too much away? You know, it's supposed to be an allegory, according to the filmmakers and the writers themselves, that basically, I don't know much about the Serbian situation, I'm quite ignorant to that myself, but, you know, it's written and directed by some angry people, it feels.
Yeah.
And they're using the idea of pornography as a sort of allegory for the situation about art and economy and everything and within their own country. And once you know that, yeah, you can see it as an allegory. But problem with the film is when you watch it and you don't know that, it doesn't really give you any indicators for it to be an allegory. It just feels like a really nasty story.
Yeah, it does.
Subversive story.
To me, like you said about it being an exploitation film, it never felt like an exploitation film. It never particularly felt like a film that was designed purely to shock.
That's the interesting one, mate. I'm kind of with you on that. When I watched, I was thinking that's quite sensitively done here and sensitively done there. And, it felt like the filmmakers were saying, okay, there's no way we can really do this, this and this.
Yeah.
So we'll do this, this and this.
Yeah.
And it felt they were playing with what they thought they could get away with and what they could.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then equally, you know, if they weren't, they felt that they weren't censoring themselves, but they still were. You know, imagine what kind of film they would make if they weren't censoring themselves.
Yeah, of course.
And they could really ram home the ideas that they were trying to get across with sort of implication and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you think this film has pushed the boundaries as far as...
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah, I honestly do. You know, there's taboo subjects in all sorts of different films and stuff, and people break them, and that's the nature of the film itself as an art form, to sort of push and break boundaries and get people to talk about things and stuff like that. The problem I've got with this film is because, you know, it's called a Serbian film, and, you know, it's all very much about the Serbian political area, that it might have, you know, weight where it originally comes from, but they're releasing this film, like, worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that knowledge when we're watching this film or whatever. People can just stumble across it and see it for, you know, a film.
Yeah.
I think that's where the problems arise. You don't know what really their intentions are as a filmmaker. What are they trying to say with this film? You know. So you have a responsibility as a filmmaker, and I think the certain scenes in this film that, you know, this guy's first film, and I think that. You know, he's always going to be regarded as the guy that made, as other writers have been saying, that film.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like on his grave when he.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the guy that made that film. So, you know, what's he going to follow it up with? You know, is he going to get money? I mean, he's a talent. Don't get me wrong. I know the guys who all the people that produce this film are really, really talented across the board, from the sort of performances and the people on the technical crew and everything like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all deserve some sort of success, but I just think, I don't know, it's a difficult one. Artistically, yeah, really interesting, but kind of hollow at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean by it. It's a difficult one to call whether is what his career is going to do after this.
Mm.
He'll either, I'm sure he'll get money from somewhere, but how much and from where is perhaps the key.
Well, you know, I mean, this is the point, the allegory they're making with their film is it's really hard for them to make art in their country without being kind of pushed from political, from the people higher up, the hierarchy, who basically want this, this and this if they're going to make a film. You know, I mean, we laugh about the Hollywood kind of structure, you know, you must have this, you must have that before you can get a decent budget to make a film or whatever, but I think obviously where they're coming from, it's a much bigger deal and far more sort of confined. But yeah, it'd be weird, really weird for him to like go and turn down and make Piranha 2 or something, you know what I mean? Yeah. It'd be quite strange to see that happen, but it is a talking point. I personally kind of regret seeing it, So yeah. I don't know. I'm you know, we've been film fans for years, and we always want to see what the latest film is that's causing a bit of a hoo-ha. You know, what's an interesting thing about this film and other films like The Human Centipede and Martyrs and stuff like that is we're going back to an old school William Castle type affair where, you know, the hype for a movie was huge.
Yeah.
And you approached it with trepidation.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I can't think of you know, films in the last sort of 15 years that I've done that, you know. I've got to think back to, like, Necromantic, you know.
Yeah.
And films like Aftermath. And Men Behind the Sun, stuff like that, where you heard about it and you wanted to kind of check it out, but at the same time you know sat on the pile for a while because you didn't really want to see it.
You've got to gear yourself up to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you do. You know, and there hasn't really been anything like that apart from Human Centipede last year or earlier on. Well, yeah, I guess earlier on this year in terms of release. But you see, that in itself is a different kettle of fish. The thing with The Human Centipede is your mind can create something far worse than that film will ever show you. And in a sense, that is proper exploitation filmmaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, is it Tom Six?
Tom Six.
He's got to be commended for that.
I'm sure there's an old Western actor called Tom Mix. I'm certain of it. And I wonder if this guy, like... in this guy Dutch as well.
Yeah,
so
possibly, yeah.
Tom Six.
It's Six Productions, isn't it? I think his sister is a producer and stuff as well. But you know, again, Human Centipede, you sit down and you watch it and, yeah, it's another really nice, well-shot film, but it doesn't really have anywhere to go because you've exploited the concept before you've paid your budget
exactly.
And watch it. Whereas I think the difference with that and Serbian film is you set yourself up to watch it and it shows you stuff far worse than your mind could ever create.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And it pushes taboos, and it tackles every single taboo there is. It's a difficult one. I think basically the best way to summarise it is to say, you know, from the writer's and the director's point of view, you're fucked when you're born, and you're fucked when you die.
Yeah.
And that is the sort of an allegory for the film.
Yeah. Really.
And if you can put all the beginning, middle, and ending to that in your own mind, you still won't come up with anything quite as foul and wretched as this film. So, any more thoughts?
Well, there's a lot of good quotes out there. There's a lot of good reviews about it. A lot of them say how brilliant the film is, but then also at the same time, at the end they say, I'll never watch it again, or I wished I'd never seen it, like you say.
It's going back to what we said earlier on. The last film to really shake, rattle and roll me like that, as a film, was I Spit on Your Grave, when I first saw that.
Did you not think that...
I couldn't believe at the time that I saw I Spit on Your Grave that you would dedicate 45 minutes to, like, the brutality of a victim. And to some extent, this film dedicates 90-odd minutes to the brutality of a victim.
It does, and it's a reasonable comparison that I'm just thinking that I Spit on Your Grave is, to me, just more exploitation.
Oh, it totally is, yeah, it totally is. I only mean in terms of how the effect it had on me, you know, and I thought, wow, you know, I mean, I'd seen kind of a Holocaust and House at the Edge of the Park and stuff like that, and they're all quite, you know, dark and nasty films and stuff, but that really kind of slapped you around the face and you thought about it for a long time after. And Martyrs, to some extent as well, I thought about that, and it really made me think, you know, the next day after I'd seen that film, and you can't shake a lot of the imagery. It's going to take a long time to shake the imagery from a Serbian film, if ever. You know, it's probably always going to be there. There's some other ones in there as well. I know people talk about Fred Vogel and his August Underground movies. I've not seen the trilogy. I've seen tiny snippets of, I think, the second one, and just a few little seconds I saw of that film that totally repulsed me as well, you know. So I think it's interesting. I don't want to kind of slag off the hardcore horror fan that really kind of likes, like, kind of like transgressive cinema and stuff, you know. But I think if you actually say you're a fan of a Serbian film, and you're going to, like, watch it all the time, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I probably wouldn't want to hang out with you.
I would say,
do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
I know. I could call myself a fan of the film,
yeah,
but I probably will never watch it again.
Yeah, it's indelible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It's not a repeated viewing experience. No. It's a trip. It's a trip. And I think you have to be, like, you know, if you were going to take a trip on drugs, you'd psych yourself up, you'd be prepared for it, you'd make sure you had the right people with you. And to some extent, this film's a bit like that, you know?
Yeah.
I think when you've seen it, you have to talk about it with someone, you know? You can't keep those sort of feelings inside. It's quite interesting. I went on YouTube after I'd seen it, and it's a bit like the old two goals, one cup thing.
Yeah,
but now, yeah, exactly. Now it's the reactions to a Serbian film. You know, and you know, again, it's interesting because socially we can all talk about it, and you know, and like what the point that you made on earlier on about us pushing the envelope and that as well. I just don't. Sometimes, you know, I'm all for pushing the envelope in terms of you know, kind of interacting with your audience and everything. But I just think there is a responsibility, and I think there's certain avenues that we perhaps shouldn't go down as you know, as filmmakers and stuff. And I think these guys have chose to go down that route, and I think they're always going to sort of pay the price for it, really.
Yeah, of course. It's like something that I know it's there and I appreciate it being there, but by the same token, I kind of don't want it to be there as well.
Yeah, that's it. The world would probably be a better place if that film didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think just to know it's there...
Yeah, it's kind of grim.
Yeah.
It's kind of grim.
It is.
But you mentioned Human Centipede earlier, and you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, well, again, like I said before, it's a really nicely shot film. You know, there's a lot of tracking shots. It's all crisp. It's kind of not particularly well acted, though. Although I will say that the guy who plays the lead villain is kind of like a sort of Asian... Christopher Walken.
I kind of like that mix.
And he's quite good. Although I know the guy, the director and producers and that, they're hyping up the Human Centipede, is it full sequence now?
Yeah.
So that's on the cards. It does make you, when you have seen the film, it makes you think, how are they going to do that?
Yeah.
Without giving too many spoilers away, you kind of think, the end of the first one is pretty much the end. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. I don't know. Again, I think maybe the concept has blown that concept, really.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, like I said before, the whole weight behind this film was, wow, what a concept. And, you know, your mind made a much better film than what he could.
Yeah.
And I think... And it's actually quite a restrained film as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I don't even know why it'd be an 18, really, apart from the concept. I don't really think you see anything... That amazing. It's all down to what your brain is suggesting to you. Whereas I think with the second film that he's going to make, it's clearly going to be gross out, and it's probably going to show you the stuff that the first one didn't really show you.
Yeah,
you know, I can imagine some financier somewhere going, yeah, we want this, we want that. You know what I mean?
And more shitty
shitting in people's mouths. We want to see. you know what I mean? So you know that's the question. I don't know. It brings on another kind of discussion, doesn't it? As to where are we going with these types of films?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a horror fan, and I came into horror fans because I wanted to be scared.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be entertained by some of the best directors out there who use that format to proper take you somewhere and show you like magic tricks like a magician would.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think we're going in a different direction now.
You don't want to be repulsed, do you?
I think that's the difference.
You don't want to go to the
You want to be horrified, you don't want to be repulsed.
Exactly.
So maybe there's a new genre kind of creeping up here, which is repulsion cinema, do you know what I mean? I've never been a big fan. I've never, like, kind of wanted to see the guinea pig films.
No.
You know, it just doesn't really appeal to me, or Faces of Death, that kind of stuff doesn't really appeal to me at all. So it's not an avenue that I would want to pursue.
I would say it's not true horror.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, again, going back to Serbian film, even calling it a horror film, it's got horrific moments in it, but it's not a horror film.
No, it isn't.
I think that's probably the only audience that will find for it, though.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I can't imagine your art house crowd going down and going, oh, yes, this Serbian film.
Yeah, exactly.
I just can't see them going to see it. So I think the only audience they've got is horror fans, and then they're the ones that are divided by it as well.
Yeah.
So... It's got a very small window there. But there'll be these other films coming out that did that. Another one that I saw and I kind of regretted seeing was a film that came out a couple of years ago called Grotesque. Did you ever see that?
No, I haven't seen Grotesque.
Okay, it was going to get a release over here from Tartan, I think, and got pulled at the last minute.
Yeah.
And again, I think it was a bit like a modern sort of guinea pig movie where it was like 70 minutes long. You just followed this guy, abduct a couple, and watch him like do horrible things to their body and that kind of stuff like that. And then it ends...
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, why do we want to see films like that, you know?
Sometimes you got to question the mindset of guys who make stuff like that.
Yeah, you do. I mean, going back to the August Underground stuff with Fred Vogel now, I know he runs a production effects company called Toe Tag Pictures.
Yeah.
And the whole point of these movies was that they weren't getting enough commission to go out and do their effects for the people, so they thought they'd make their own films.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it's a great idea. You know, it's totally a great idea, and I can see why they did it. And obviously, they're really good at what they do, because everyone says that their effects are, like, so realistic. So, you know, that's another angle to come at it. And I can personally see why he did those films. I just don't really understand the people that kind of make the human sentiment and like, you know, Serbian film. What really, where they're going with these sort of
things? Well, to be honest, I would separate out those two films. I do think that Serbian film has artistic merit.
It does have artistic merit, it does.
Whereas Human Centipede is more exploitation.
It is, yeah, it is.
And there's nothing wrong with exploitation. But I would say that certainly artistically a Serbian film sits more what I would call, well, I would view it as a film that is worth watching and analyse, well, not worth watching, but...
do you regret having seen it?
No, I don't think
maybe,
so.
Maybe I don't regret having seen it, it's an art form at the end of the day, but there's certain imageries and certain ideas that are brought up in that film that perhaps I didn't right want to deal with, you know.
Exactly. I wouldn't put the makers of a Serbian film in the same bracket as guys like Fred Vogel.
No.
I wouldn't, mm-hmm. I don't think the guys who made a Serbian film did it necessarily just to shock people.
See, this is the argument, because a lot of people do think that, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's a difficult one. Unless you meet them and, you know, see their heart and where they're coming from,
yeah.
I don't think we'll know. But you have to see the film as it represents itself.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, I can possibly see it as an allegory. I can possibly see it as a stylish, well-done film, but I still think there is a certain responsibility and a certain...
There is. It is a stylish, well-done film. There is, like, no denying that.
Mm.
But I guess, like I said, you know, any idiot who's got a bit of style can make something look good, but it still may be...
No, it still has something else as well, but what
it's
is it?
It's polishing
what?
A turd,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly. But what's that turd trying to tell you?
Well,
that's the thing. That's the thing with that film.
Okay. Well, then...
Damaged. People do damaged things and you'll end up damaged.
Yeah, but then do you think that the message in a Serbian film is more... There's more of a message in the film than there is in Human Centipede.
Oh, totally. Completely.
Yeah.
There's no message in Human Centipede.
Yeah.
Not at all, you know. But there is a message. It's just deciphering what that message is.
Yeah,
of course. It's not a clear message. I think that's what holds the problem. That is the problem with the film.
But then
it's grey. Everywhere's grey and, you know, nothing's solid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that may be because it's been lost in translation
because
we don't know enough about Serbia. And,
yeah. That's right.
And, well, B, yeah, we don't know enough about Serbia.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you're absolutely right. So, all right, let's move on. Let's end the show in a slightly more upbeat way. And, we'll do this.
So we're going to go back to a concept that we mentioned in the original podcast, which is where are they now?
Yeah.
Bit. And... As we said from that, we're going to have a quick look back at some old directors, actors, just guys back from horror films and cult films back in the day, and just see what the fuck they've been up to.
And who are we doing, Ben?
We are doing Fred Decker.
Fred Decker, brilliant.
Right. For those who don't know, Fred Decker directed, I think, two of the best horror films of the 80s.
I totally agree with you, man.
Yeah. And I think for perhaps 2 years... Within that period, when he made these two films back to back, he probably was the best director working in the genre at the time.
I agree with you. Should we kick off with the first one, like?
Yeah.
Which was
Night of the Creeps.
Night of the Creeps.
1986.
Yeah.
The night of the formal is finally here for Chris, Cindy, and JC. It's going to be the best night of their lives. But tonight is also the night of the creeps. From a world unknown comes a nightmare unimagined. First, they are under you, around you, on you, and then inside you.
They get in through your mouth, and you walk around while they incubate, even if you're dead.
They are a new breed of terror.
Freeze!
They are a different kind of horror.
Zombies, exploding heads, creepy crawlies.
We could have a little problem.
The creeps are taking over.
Oh, I got good news and bad news, girls.
What?
The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
You have never had a night like this. Night of the creeps. If you scream, you're dead.
Yeah, I can remember watching this on video when it came out. It had a really cool cover with, I think it was like a 7. It looked a bit like House. Do you remember when House came out? It had a similar sort of video cover to that. But yeah, no, it's cool. Night of the Creeps. It's prom night. You've got these Americans that are all gearing up for that. And an asteroid has landed back in the 50s or something.
Back in the 50s, yeah.
Yeah, with this sort of weird mutant thing. It looks a bit like Shivers.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So if you imagine the worms from Shivers, and these worms go around and they affect people, all these teens who are in all the bloody different houses that they have in America, like
Alpha, Gamma, Beta,
yeah,
Gamma, Beta,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
Shmata.
And so what we get is these sort of stumbling corpses, zombies, that go around and try and either just mess people up.
Yeah.
It is somewhat of a loose plot, if you like.
Yeah, it is. It's a complete throwback to sort of like 50s films.
It is.
But that's the whole idea with the 80s. The whole idea with the 80s horror film was to make them like the 50s, but with like modern prosthetics and
that's
stuff
it.
Like that.
It's like what Stuart Gordon was
doing.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And it is.
Look at The Thing. The guy that set it off, John Carpenter, kind of set the ball rolling with that, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a good film. It's really fun. It's one of them. Basically, we went to Dead by Dawn last year. Night of the Creeps showed. Fred Decker was there. We met him, and he's a thoroughly likable bloke. And he really is a good candidate for this. Where is he now? Because he was a really talented filmmaker with Night of the Creeps.
Yeah.
I think there was. It came up. It was released the same time as something else that was massive, and I think it crippled the film.
No, that's the.
Oh, it was that Monster Squad.
Might be Monster Squad.
Right, Monster Squad is the film he next did.
Which leads us into the next
the Monster
film.
Squad.
The Monster Squad.
Which is a great film.
Yeah.
Always pissed me off in telly because it started off in scope and it just looked fantastic. And then as soon as the credits were done, it goes straight to full screen.
Yeah.
It right annoyed me. But yeah, Monster Squad, brilliant, man. Wolfman's got nods.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another one, like you were saying, the throwback to the 50s.
Yeah,
and it's like that. That's what you got from Fred Decker was
yeah. Should we explain in Monster Squad? You had you kind of you kind of the rights to the Universal look of Frankenstein and Dracula and all that. So they kind of came up with their own interpretations, which to all of them look pretty much right, don't they?
Yeah.
You know who they all are. I think he wanted the creature from the Black Lagoon and wasn't allowed it, so he came up with this other creature.
Yeah.
Which is the only one.
Looked like Merman out of He-Man.
That's yeah. But yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really cool film. I can't really remember the plots to it, to tell you the plots.
Well,
needless to say, all these icons of horror are in an American town.
That's it.
Some teenage kids have to find a virgin to do something.
To send Dracula and these other monsters back
to hell.
So again, it's a bit of a loose plot, but... But it's like I said, no, it is great fun now. Yeah. Absolute great fun. And that's what Fred Decker did.
Yeah.
And I think, I bet he was in his 20s when he was making this.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was a horror fan himself. Just kind of got it upon himself to write these films and get them out there. And he got money and produced them. And, you know, I remember at the time thinking, wow, who is this guy? I want to follow him. You know,
yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. And there's just been a big gap in his career. And obviously, the nail in the coffin was his third film, wasn't it, man?
Yeah. Should RoboCop 3.
Which kind of does send a bit of a shudder down your spine when you say it. Because it is quite an appalling film. I think there's many reasons for that. It's the old cliche of the studio intervention and Fred Decker not being allowed to do what he wanted to do with the film and stuff like that. But yeah, it was the final nail in the coffin for him theatrically. I think, didn't you say he did some TV shows after that?
He did. He wrote and produced. He wrote some episodes for Tales from the Crypt. He also wrote and produced some episodes for Enterprise as well. For any Star Trek fans out there, then that's what he was involved in. But I think he must have been, and I guess we speculated to some degree, was it a case that perhaps the studio threw a lot of money at him with RoboCop 3 and then he failed to deliver?
It's a TV movie though, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
Or was it? Or just maybe it was a movie and they thought, oh, it's only got TV standards or something.
Well,
It feels like a TV movie when you watch it though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Basically, it was the third in a trilogy. It didn't go down with the fans particularly well. And it sort of buried him, really. When we saw him at Dead by Dawn, he was, you know, he's quite a humble guy.
Yeah.
I think he'd love to keep making movies. You know, he's a talent. He really is. And it's a shame. It's a shame that no one's giving him the money to make the films that he wants to make, really. You know, some of these guys on you know, go off the radar that we're going to be talking about, and some of them obviously doing different jobs and they're not in the film business anymore. Whereas I think, obviously, that's what Fred Deck is doing. Equally, I think he'd jump straight back into that pool if he could.
Yeah, I think so. And he's still only as a young guy as well.
Mm.
And it's a shame, like I was saying, I think for two years at least when he produced Night of the Creeps and The Monster Squad, he was
top of his game.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly, and that's what we miss. So.
So we salute you, Fred Decker.
We certainly do.
Okay, let's wrap things up. Yes, what can we expect from the podcast next time?
Well, I guess we'll perhaps do a bit of a shortened version, perhaps with the interview with Rob.
Yeah.
Depending on how much he fucking talks, but we'll see.
We'll see.
So, hopefully an interview with Rob Nevitt regarding Celluloid Screams will go. We can perhaps have a look at the list of films that we've got and get his opinion on it. And then, obviously, later podcast down the line, will be our thoughts.
Yeah, I think it'd be really good to ask Rob as well, sort of the ins and outs of running a festival.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's a big game. It's a lot of work for him and the various other people that run these sort of festivals. You know, they're committed to it because they love it. And they spend a lot of time with like distributors and stuff like that, don't they, trying to work out deals and stuff like that. So
so perhaps our next podcast will be a festival special.
I think perhaps it
should.
Why not? Okay, there you go. We'll talk about Fright Fest that we've not been to for a while.
No.
And Dead by Dawn, which we do go to quite regularly, but she had a year off last year, Adele.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about speculating what Dead by Dawn next year could be like as well. So just to say, thanks a lot for listening to us. I think this is our third one that's going to be online. We really appreciate any feedback we can get, especially on the Facebook page, because it's dead easy to do.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with us, whether you think we're talking shit, anything at all, just don't be too derogatory though. We might have to delete your comment. But just to say as well that you can find us on YouTube, Deranged TV.
Yeah.
You can find us on MySpace at Deranged Pictures. I don't know if anyone uses MySpace anymore, but we're there in all our glory. You can see our mugs talking about other films and stuff like that as well. So check us out.
Yeah. Stay deranged.